show that all Fair Board members are present and that we have signed the minutes of November 3rd, December 10th, and April 14th as previously distributed. And we are looking at OSU Extension and 4-H update.
Good morning, gentlemen. A wonderful day it is.
Yes.
In the interest of time, I don't think we have much of a 4-H or fair update, or unless you have specific questions, we won't go into a bunch of detail. Of course, 4-H is in full swing. We did manage with the help of Mr. Belmont and Roy with the county to get about 40 yards of dirt moved from the indoor riding arena to the outdoor arena. Got everything regraded and tilled and made a wonderful showcase for our horse pre-fair last weekend. Really a needed improvement and a significant improvement, and thank you guys for making that all work. We're in full swing. We're ramping up. We had a weigh-in a month ago. We've got our livestock weigh-in coming up next month, and things are looking good. We're pleased with the way everything is going. Seabreeze has been out at the fairgrounds doing an amazing job. It really looks good, I think, from the maintenance or grounds perspective. We do have a whole list of improvements and things to talk about that we think can make the fair better for this year, but I suspect you've got time on the agenda to talk about those types of things, and we'll wait until the appropriate time to do that. Have some fair update?
Not much. We continue to get vendor applications, a surprising number of food vendor applications, actually, which is wonderful. We are applying this afternoon again for the Destination Newport Committee's grant that helps with out-of-county advertising, so we'll be going to them again this year and hopefully get to do that again. We're kind of unable to do that without extra support, so we really hope that will happen. Other than that, things are just proceeding at pace and things are going really well with the county. Thank you for everybody who contributed to make that a smooth process. So, yep. Good on my end.
Two other quickies. We do now have the draft of the MOU with the university that we can forward to the university. Mr. Belmont and I worked on that earlier in the week and finally have that. That's wonderful. I also have a draft agreement for riding passes ready to go now, and I would just like you to take a peek at it, and then we're ready to send that out and start letting people ride indoors again. So we're very happy about that, or ride indoor and outdoor, ride on the fairgrounds. Happy to answer any additional questions you may have.
I have a question. When riding passes are issued, then what's actually granted with that?
Just the ability to ride during specific hours of the day and week to people that pay a fee to do so. Riding either within the outdoor arena or within the indoor arena, depending on weather conditions or what they want to do, what they're trying to accomplish.
So essentially, will it be the same kind of access and program that Town and Country was doing these past mm-hmm. few years?
Yeah, it really won't be any different. Mm-hmm. The schedule may change a little bit, and we're working on ways to streamline the expense of opening, locking, and unlocking the fairgrounds. The contract with TCB to just do the whole thing is insurmountable at this time, so it's probably going to fall on us to open and close during the week, and maybe we'll have TCB do it on the weekends, that sort of thing.
And eventually, I guess, we're going to come to a discussion of this nature, but this moving of 40 yards, now was that simply what, to make it usable?
We did to accomplish two different things there. We have there's an area in the outdoor arena that has some significant drainage issues and constantly loses the footing, the fill. We call that affectionately Lake Lincoln when it rains. We also had a bunch of dirt that had just been pulverized by horse hooves for decades in the indoor arena. So what we did is we scraped that 2 to 3 inches, got the light, dusty, just horribly pulverized dirt out of the indoor arena and put it in Lake Lincoln to fill the hole in Lake Lincoln temporarily. Horse footings are always an ongoing battle. It's never a matter, if you followed any of the state fairground stuff from last year and the year before, you constantly fight with that. But this was a really good economical way to solve two problems temporarily. And we'll get, you know, we don't have anything that we need to do right away, but at some point down the road, we'll talk about what needs to happen to improve those footings further. But for now, we're good.
I think it's fair to say that what you did was refurbish the ground, yeah, and reshape the ground at the same time,
yeah,
to have better facilities, both indoors and outdoors, for the horses.
That's correct. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Just move a little dirt around.
Yeah.
A lot of dirt around.
Okay. Any questions? If not, let's go on with. Thank you. I'm sure we'll come back to the discussion.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, we start moving into some of the longer range things. It looks like there's some folks here that aren't on the agenda that may have some issues or questions. I was going to give an update for Stephanie because that was something on last month's agenda. And I'm not sure, Tom, what you're here for, if you've got a specific thing, but just that if you want to do some of that business.
I think it was related to the discussion of the master plan.
Yeah, that's fine. It's all related to the master plan. That's fine. Everybody.
I have a little bit of both.
Both? Okay. So let me just do a quick update while I can. Stephanie here, that as you recall, we had some discussions. We wanted to sit down with Stephanie and discuss the sportsman show and work out some questions and issues that we had with that, and we did that.
Yes.
And I met with Stephanie, so we've got it all together and with focus, and thank you to everybody for pulling that together. So we do look like we've got the potential of having this in
2017, looking like April.
So that came to fruition, and we have to put together a couple little details.
We'll do that later. I just wanted on the record the payment to close out the last
one.
I brought it with me.
Thank you.
Just want it on the record, and then if I could get an invoice or statement closing that,
sure,
would be great.
Amy, just get everything.
Take care of that.
Take care of that. So that issue has been resolved. All right, now back into the agenda. Sorry.
So we're just going to have the update on the transient lodging tax. Is that your report?
Well, I think Bill can provide it if you'd like.
Okay, well, it passed.
Yeah.
60% yes vote, so that will go into effect
July 1.
And even though we did not really plan these things to happen in concert, I think the Board of Commissioners is moving toward creating a licensing program for vacation rentals in the unincorporated areas, and that will include an enforcement capability for the first time. The number one focus of that is going to be, of course, on negative impacts of BRDs on quality of life issues in neighborhoods. But an important secondary aspect of that is to try to identify and be a little more aggressive in pursuing properties that are not paying the transient room tax. I think it's our belief that a good share of them are, but we're almost sure that there are some out there that are not. So I think, I don't want to venture any guesses on numbers, but our projected revenue of $176,000 a year from this funding stream actually will probably be on the low side, which is a good thing for giving us capacity to move forward with this project.
Very good. All right, well, I guess that brings us to C.
That allows for a lengthy and beginning of a conversation with the community on C.
Right. Well, have you thought about this, Mr. Hall?
I have. Well, I think, of course, the master plan, that's what we want to, in my eyes, the master planning process, we've got pieces of a vision that we need to really come together with a coherent vision, and I hope at the end of this we will have a master plan that we can then turn over to an architect and say, okay, convert this to architectural drawings, blueprints, so we're ready to build when the funds are in place. So I think that you know, deciding how to proceed with that master planning process is an important thing we need to do today. We also need to kind of, I think, refocus and get a direction on the recapitalization project, kind of the shorter term improvements to hopefully make the grounds more functional and more attractive. I hope at some point today we can touch on the signage issues, not only the big sign, but also some of the other signage on the grounds, and hopefully finding a way to get those changed to reflect that this is the Lincoln County Commons now. What else? And I think also this gives us an opportunity to maybe open up a discussion on the management of the grounds as well.
Is part of your intent to talk about the specifics of the structure, you know, size, shape, any of those types of things, or are we strictly...
In terms of the master plan?
In terms of the master plan, yeah, because we,
yeah, you
know, generally have said we're going to go and put up a new building out there.
And we focused on the figure of 25,000, just finally confirming that, although... You know, an interesting side idea that has come up is the county does want to develop a new emergency operations center outside of this building, given that this building is likely not going to be functional in the event of a moderate to severe Cascadia event. And so we've just had a little bit of very informal discussion that instead of a 25,000-foot building, what if we... build a 30,000-square-foot building with 5,000 square feet, perhaps, or less. I don't know. That's a figure they've come up with for preliminary discussion devoted to being an ELC, because, again, that would be a brand-new building, hopefully seismically sound, with generators, solar panels, and then if the exhibit hall does become a major evacuation site, I think being... in proximity to that site would be of some advantage, and I think, you know, but that's just one piece that we've got to talk about, I think.
Well, that one particular piece, I'm going to suggest that before we really go into detailed discussion of that facility, that you hire the architect. The architect really should hear the discussion about what's wanted, the various aspects of it, and so forth, so that they can properly plan the facility, if you will. Generally, the first thing you do is get that architect on board and talk about, this is generally what we want, and then we have them listen to all of the various particulars, and from there they develop the design. We could spend a lot of time today talking about that stuff, but the only thing that's going to happen is we're going to wind up rehashing it when you get the architect.
Right. I think that there's obviously, timing issues for some things, like we know the fair is going to happen, and we've had the starting discussions on the sign, so I hope that wouldn't get lost sight of in the course of things. I think that the product we got from LRS was sort of tone deaf to some of the things that I've heard the public ask us for. And by that I mean what a workable conference center should have, i.e. most notably breakout rooms and things like that, which on the plan we got didn't seem to really address some of that. And now with maybe you could talk a little bit more about this emergency preparedness aspect. And how would that meld? Would you see the same building, just simply larger?
Mm-hmm. With like a dedicated, secure outside entrance and maybe access to the larger building again in terms of having storage, preparation, that kind of thing available, food heating of food perhaps.
Okay. And does that involve additional money over and above?
Yeah, it would have to be funded out of another source.
Yeah. But you're sitting in the ELC right now.
Yeah.
This room converts to that, and you have to have put in a whole lot of things like data stuff. You have to get it on emergency power and do those types of things. I said I think it's important for the architect to hear the ideas, but I also think it's important for us to get some feedback from the architect as we go along, because now we're starting to talk about the real design specifics.
But wouldn't hiring an architect at this point be premature? Because until we have the master plan completed, you know, we don't know if we're going to want a 20, 25, 30,000 square foot building, where it's situated, what the other elements of the grounds are going to look like. But I think we have to say, this is exactly what we want. And then certainly the architect may say, well, something's not feasible or you need to change this. But unless we can give an architect clear marching orders of what we want.
It's kind of a, to me, it's kind of a, which comes first, the chicken or the egg. If we get our architect hired, the first part of it, they're probably not going to have a lot to do. They're going to be listening to the to the ideas and perhaps providing some feedback on those ideas and say, well, I understand what you want, but this isn't really working, or this is inordinately expensive, or that type of thing. Let me suggest this change or this alternative. I generally prefer to have the architect in on the ground floor. Now, with regard to the master plan, what we're going to do out there, I was under the impression we were pretty much going to follow what Don Mann had suggested in his report. We were going to preserve a number of the structures, take down and replace the main exhibit hall. So, and, you know, there's some questions of, like, for instance, exactly where we're going to site it. And we've talked before about doing some subsurface exploration to make sure that we've got an adequate area in terms of the foundation for it. I guess really it's just my personal preference to have the architect, you know, on the ground floor and hears these things right from the get-go, so that they know what, if you will, what they're up against and what we really want, as opposed to trying to put together, taking a whole bunch of testimony or whatever it is, and then trying to go and tell the architect, you know, what we've heard or what we think we've heard.
Well, I figure, isn't that what the master plan is for, to kind of refine and focus all these ideas? And, you know, I mean, Don Mann's recommendations, again, like LRS, it was kind of sketchy, maybe did not address all the things we want included. And if we say, you know, hypothetically, we want our 25 or 35,000 square foot building right here, you know, we want to do, say, a covered arena here, and, you know, what our expectations are, that I just...
And see, again, I think it's important for the architect to hear that discussion, so that when they actually sit down to, like, specifically site the building or do some of the other work, they've heard all of the input firsthand and know specifically what we're looking for. Now, it doesn't have to be done that way. We do testimony, we put together a bunch of stuff and then try and convey it to an architect later. But my personal preference is to get the architect on board and have them sit down on those kinds of discussions so they can take their own notes, raise their own questions, and so forth right from the get-go. Right. And it's, we put together the design team, and then we start doing the actual particulars.
I'm going to suggest, just to take a quick pause here, I'd like to hear from some of the public.
Me too.
Now that we've passed this measure, and the kind of talk I'd like to hear is that when I personally, Frank Geltner, look at that site, I see a number of outcomes. To me, the building is a given. The question is, what's that building going to look like and what's it going to contain? The second part is, there's got to be some kind of outdoor component that satisfies the needs that many people have expressed, including riding and so forth. And then there's the children's piece. And so So conceptually, I see those 9 acres or whatever, however many acres we have there, broken up in that way. The other thing, this is minor, but I would like to set into motion the process that down the road, when we do finally open the new Lincoln County Commons, that it have a Harney Street address. I think that it's simply, as many times as I have had to give people directions to that place, it's very difficult with the Third Street address to explain where it is. Harney Street is where it is. So I just want that to be in the record that somewhere down the road. But who wants to start? Maybe 4-H people.
Before they come up, can I just tag one thing you said, to Frank? I really like that idea if we can get a Harney Street address, because we're going to have that big gateway sign on 20 and Harney, and if people know, turn at the sign on Harney Street, and that's taking you right there. I think that will hopefully improve the visibility.
But Frank also mentioned something else, going back to the architect, that's important. Part of the architect's job, if you will, his job isn't, or her job isn't really to just design the building. It's to figure out how the various circulation patterns and uses of the building function together.
Mm-hmm.
Putting it in terms of a house is much easier. I mean, where do you put the laundry room? Where do you put the bathroom? Mm-hmm. Where do you put the living room?
Right. And the entire grounds really have to be thought of in that way, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, the architect not only is going to have to do that for us in terms of the building, he's going to have to do that for us in terms of the other things.
Traffic flow, pedestrian,
the outdoor area, or the children's thing. So that all of those things fit together in some logical manner in terms of the people flows.
Okay.
But again, the architect needs to hear all of that.
Yeah.
He knows what he's trying to do.
Well, again, we want anyone here to share their thoughts, but I guess maybe I'd like them to hear you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, Jim, now you've been at this 6 years, what have you felt you've heard from the community they want there?
I'd have to tell you that that's kind of been all over the board, and I suppose that's true for all of us. But generally, what I've heard from the public is they do want a continued fair. They do want a Lincoln County Fair. They do want a decent facility to hold in. And I'm talking now about the mundane things like restrooms and water and electricity and so forth, the other things that we've talked about. I think they want it reasonably well-maintained and reasonably well-managed. Those would kind of be my summary points of what I've heard from my friends and neighbors.
And Bill?
I think that reflects it pretty well. The one element that seems to have everybody who does believe the project should go forward and is supportive is the multi-use exhibition hall. And, I've heard a lot of strong sentiment for a covered arena, and again, something that will accommodate the traditional uses as well as open up some of the potential for new things. But again, nothing that I think we haven't discussed, whether through the Blue Ribbon process, the LRS process, the Don Mann process, again, car shows, boat shows, things like the Celtic Festival, conferences, concerts, potentially sporting events, the whole range of things that you would see in a facility like this.
Let me describe that as flexibility in what I
hear.
For instance, right now we got the Master Gardeners over there in the exhibit hall setting up for their plant sale this coming weekend. The facility needs to be able to, for instance, accommodate that type of thing and all the other myriad things that Bill described.
Winter Farmers Market,
yeah,
and maybe, I'm still hoping they'll look at the grounds as perhaps their ultimate solution for the summer market as well, since it's resting, I'd say, uneasily in the center of downtown right now.
And I guess I would add two other things that I've heard to some extent. It needs to be usable year-round, and what I'm talking about now is kind of all-weather surfacing in key areas and that type of thing. You know, so people aren't waiting.
People don't want to be waiting through Lake Lincoln
or something like that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, you want attractive landscaping, but too much grass is not a good thing.
It isn't so much that it's attractive landscaping, but that it's an all-weather type facility that people can use, again, without getting their feet wet and doing that kind of thing.
Okay. All right. Anybody? Todd?
So I think you guys are on the right track. And one of the things, and I think Bill reiterated it maybe as better than I could, one of the realizations that I came to Thursday night after the passing of the new measure, and Commissioner Hall and I were on the radio together, I think we kind of had this aha moment at the same time. This is the pathway forward to more than a decade of work by not only the Blue Ribbon Committee, but previous fair boards and all of the various recommendations and studies and proposals that have been put together in that more than a decade. I think the task now is, how do you coalesce those ideas into what the vision is going forward? You've got a ton of ideas. And now the job is sifting through those and determining what recommendations can you take and put into effect reasonably? Which ones are not feasible and for what reason? I think justification to why those aren't feasible at this time needs to go in there. And I think the overriding umbrella is multiple use. That's the only way that this thing stays occupied through the year. You've got to do all of that with a view towards multiple use, not singular use. I think that's what you're saying. I think that's the path. But now the task is, how do you collect all that information together and make those decisions? And I think it's just going to be a process of you guys being able to do that, first figuring out what all the various facets or pieces or recommendations have been, and then figuring out what's feasible and what needs to be rejected because it's not.
Right. The other thing I would say is, a lot of the information that we have is relatively old. Maybe it's outdated, maybe no longer viable, feasible, whatever it is. We've changed from what the original concept was.
To a degree.
To some extent from... I mean, if we originally were talking about 40,000-50,000 square feet.
Right,
we're talking about 25,000-30,000.
Again,
we need to get somebody to pull together the updated information on what we're really trying to do.
Yeah, and I do think in those discussions, having the architect there is prudent. It's not going to be expensive to have somebody attending some meetings and paying for some hours. The expense comes when they start drawing, but they'll have a much better conceptual idea of what you're trying to accomplish if they were, you know, there for that 10 hours previous to understand what, you know, where this came from or how these ideas all fit together.
Right.
But I think you've got to keep...
go ahead. Your side now. Okay. Stephanie and then Tom.
Well, I've been on some of the very early studies and been on the board a couple of times, and it's been lots of talk and no action, and we're getting down to a point where we can have action. So I guess... what I'm asking you is, when you're considering, as you put together your master plan, is that you draw from not just the frequent users, but the occasional users as well, having, you know, been very connected to the fair board and in doing my own events, I see that there has been, over the years, a disconnect between the frequent users and those who come in once or twice a year. So as you make those plans for the permanent facility, you're going to be needing to listen heavier toward the less frequent users, because they're the ones you're going to be inviting in to be more frequent users. Because if you're going to be a fully multiple use facility, what we've done for years and years and years has to expand. And if you don't know what people like me, who do an event once or twice a year, need, you're just going to be rebuilding for those who frequent all the time.
And that's not a big enough base. And can I expand on something you said? I think you're absolutely right, but also the non-users who are at least potentially users.
Exactly.
One example, during the Don Mann meetings, we heard from the Quilters Guild. Mm-hmm. You know, they're putting on their show right now in the Newport Rec Center, and they said, nothing against the folks at the city, but that building is really not laid out for a good quilt show. They've got the parking issues, and they would love to do it in a new exhibit hall. They will not do it in this one, but they said when this building comes to pass, they would love to move it to this facility.
I think that is the bigger concern, is we really know what the frequent users want. Mm-hmm. I think you've gotten a lot of information there, but the bits and pieces that Jim was alluding to needing to be updated are the newer users and the new users who haven't been yet. Mm-hmm. And how you connect to that information is people who have fewer events there who want to do more. I want to do concerts. There's never been a real concert there. So how do you plan for that? You need to come to people like me who have a need to use that facility to know what we need, too. Because it's not just, you know, I've been on the other side of it, of the frequent users, for many years. But when I have the list of wants to do's, that has never been a discussion because there's never been an issue. There's never been a facility. So if it's the dream is to have a facility that can reach out to those events, you need those planners involved right now.
So, Stephanie, before I call on Tom, are you primarily speaking to indoor activities?
Actually, both, because I'm also thinking, you know, you have car events, show and shines, RV events. I want to do those as well, and I do want to do concerts. I've done a few things, and I have the ability to do a lot more if some things are considered in the planning stage.
Okay. Tom?
So, my comments are pretty similar in some ways to that. I think, you know, all the meetings that we've had during the Blue Ribbon panel and then Don Mann's review, again, we hear from the people who are using it because we know that people come out to protect their interests.
Right.
Whenever they feel that their interests are are in jeopardy. And so who we haven't heard from is people who use it rarely, or the people who feel that they have never been served by the county fair.
Exactly.
And so I think now is the time, before we hire an architect, we need to figure out what the county wants in a board, and we need to be proactive. It doesn't mean just having a meeting with an open call. We need to, you know, leaders need to be proactive in searching out what they need to hear, mm-hmm. not just waiting for it. And so, you know, from my perspective, I'm involved with youth athletics, a big deal, and I think there's a tremendous amount that can be gained because of the placement of the commons next to the high school. That could really benefit from shared usage and shared maintenance of those facilities when neither have the spaces that they really need. You know, we have at all schools in Newport anyway, you know, every piece of grass is used by 5 kids a day except for the huge piece of grass at the fairgrounds. And, you know, so I think thinking a little broader and trying to work partnerships and recognize where the overlapping interests are will be a big deal.
That's a good point, yeah.
And I think, you know, going back to you, I think sort of going forward and making I mentioned this to Frank and Bill, but making the fairgrounds more community receptive is we have to deal with the perimeter fencing issue and the locking. And, you know, I think the solution that we have now works for nobody except for TCB. They love it. But securing some of the interior structures better so that more of the exterior spaces can be more available more of the time. I have my own personal ideas about what that should be. I don't want to force them on there. I would like them to be one of many considerations. But I think what we know now is really not enough to go forward. And so I think definitely hire an architect is much, much too soon. And I'll just say the idea of adding the emergency operations center to me at the fairgrounds is just a terrible idea of the county trying to jump in on the renovation. The county owns tremendous amounts of property immediately adjacent to that facility. If they want an operations center, build it. Building an operations center there at the fairgrounds means building a facility which we hope will never, ever be used. That is a waste of that space.
And you have
the
a very
whole point
limited
is to
space.
Have people using that mm-hmm. space. So, you have a county building. If you need more space for a major operations center, revive, renovate that building, make it what you need. So anyway, those are a couple of my thoughts, but mostly I just want us to revisit the, you know, and come up with a new planning structure, get more voices in, and actively find those things that we need.
See, the way I would describe this is, it's like I stand on the beach and I look out at the horizon and I see a cloud and it's clearly defined to me. But if I get in my boat and start heading for the cloud or the fog bank or whatever it is, the closer I get to it, the less defined, if you will, it becomes. And when I get into it, I can't see the limits of it at all. I think we're at that point where we can see the cloud out there, but we have not established a clear definition of where the limits of it are and what the interior of it's going to look like. And if you want to talk about the process, I think the process now is doing those things.
Can I say just a couple of things on that, and I definitely want to be recognized? Well, the EOC, I'll just say, isn't exclusively for the 9.0 Cascadia event. I mean, how many times, Mr. Belmont, do you think in the last few years we have activated the EOC in here? Certainly it was activated all day in 2011 after the Japanese tsunami.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if it'd be possible for it to be a multi-use space. What's the rough square footage of the Harney building?
Oh, 1,200 maybe.
Okay. That maybe this is space that's 4-H space, except in time of activation of the EOC, and then you plug in all the computers and it becomes the EOC. I don't know, just an idea, just part of heading toward that horizon.
I don't think that putting an EOC component in it is actually a bad idea at all. Just like this room right here right now is an EOC center, and it's used for a whole wide variety of things. It only becomes the emergency operations center in the event of a major issue,
right,
major disaster.
Then we unlock, but, bring out the equipment, set it up.
Right,
but still, it's
this equipment, when we, you know, we had to go back and redo all kinds of computer wiring and get it on the genset and all that kind of stuff to make this room usable as an EOC.
Yeah.
When we build that facility over there, we could build that stuff into the walls, the genset, the plugs and everything. And by and large, people wouldn't even know they were in an EOC, just like this room.
Right.
But if we do it when we're building it, it's considerably less expensive than to try and go back and retrofit an area like we did this room.
Right.
If we do it right up front. Plus, we'll have the advantage of having a genset put on the facility, which I would suggest otherwise we would not have. That means we would have a building that would be usable for other types of, I'll call them emergencies, not necessarily an earthquake.
Floods, flood storms.
You know, we have an unusually large storm, and we need some area where we can put some people and keep them sheltered and warm, for instance.
Exactly.
And we've lost the power, but with a genset on the building for the EOC, it could also run to do that and those types of things. I actually like the idea, provided we do it in the manner I'm talking about, where, by and large, people are not going to realize that they're in an EOC area at all.
Yeah, if it's just
it's going to be a space used just like this one for all kinds of purposes.
If it was just to be dead space only used as an EOC, then
no,
I would agree that's
not,
space.
Not that.
We can set it up.
Right, and that's part of the problem with building a separate EOC is that you've got then a lot of dead space that's rarely used. But if you put it in someplace like this, it can be used virtually every day for a whole wide variety of things.
It could be a breakout room,
it's still
or a pair of breakout
ready to go
or seven
in the event we need it. Plus, again, with a genset on it, the structure could be used for these other types of natural disaster types of things, you know, where we need an area to shelter people or something like that.
But I think we're getting ahead of the game on this.
Well, I mean, you know, talking about frequent and infrequent users, it's the building has been used as a warming shelter for years.
Yep.
So I don't think we're going to put that aside. And I think Tom's characterization is probably misses the mark a little. I think it's closer to what Jim is saying. In other words, this room is used 95% of the time for other purposes entirely, but it's convertible to an emergency operation center, and so I don't think you're looking at a space that is going to be designed to be underutilized.
Yeah. Not single use.
I was partially responding to Bill's idea that we have to add 5,000 square feet to have it. And if, so, but now you're talking about if this is integrated into what's already there, then we don't need to add 5,000 square feet. We need to refine the idea of what the 25 we're already talking about is.
If there's functional space within the 5,000 that can also be 25,000 that can also be designated for EOC use, then that's fine. But
the 25,000 square feet idea is not enough information for me right now, because what we're really concerned with is in Lincoln County, what spaces are available. Now, keeping in mind, I'm always conscious that the city of Newport has dangled $3 million, okay? So that's always in the back of my mind, and I know we're Newport-centric in this community, but nevertheless, for us to be good neighbors with our lodging properties, we have to have a facility that's sized about just right that can perform what they cannot perform. So I tend to agree that it's probably a bit premature to go directly to an architect. But I would like to think that there is some professional that we could employ. Just let that thought pause now, and let's get back to Stephanie.
Well, I was my mind, as I've seen the facilities for so many years, the biggest mistake is you build something for too specific a purpose. It can't be multi-purpose. And when you invite things like setting up the winter farmers market, they're also going to have the experience of, oh, but if we're going to have more winter events that are annual, then that's going to mess up their schedule as well. So you've got to keep that in mind when you're doing this planning, because if you really truly are multi-purpose, even making commitments to long-term tenants is going to be an issue, because that's going to cut off your ability to appeal to those short-term events that have 3 or 4 day runs or a 1 day event. So it's going to be a tough balance, but the more multi-purpose, the more bare bones it is, the better. The more bells, whistles, doors, gates that you put on it cuts down its usage. What you think is more is less.
The other important thing I think that Bill mentioned about adding an EOC component is we would undoubtedly get some funding help from some other sources, as I understand
it. We've done some exploration of that. Is there money, Mr. Belmont?
There may be money for components of it. There used to be money several years ago with money to actually build a structure or help build a structure.
Yeah, and I thought that's gotten away.
That's pretty much gone away. There doesn't seem to be that kind of money. But there may be money to do, you know, things like the gym set, which would then service the entire property potentially, or the building. So there can be component parts of that might find additional funding.
Yeah, I don't think we can dismiss.
Does anybody want to say anything who has not been heard? Yes, Linda?
I want to just go on what Stephanie was saying when she talked about the farmer's market. When you consider the farmer's market being at the county grounds, that means every Saturday for 4 hours or 6 hours.
Yeah.
That means you're providing them with their business location, you're paying all their overhead, and they're blocking anybody from using it for a weekend event. If they were going to be using the county grounds, do it also, as you said, and make them a permanent tenant and make them invest in a space.
But I am opposed to that, too.
Yeah. Well, if that's what you want to do, if you want to provide a space for a Saturday market, which is 4 to 6 hours a week, it's no different than you build the church for Easter Sunday. We don't do that. Saturday market really cannot be considered as part of one of the users because they want it every single Saturday from 9 to 10.
That's exactly the point. That locks everyone out.
Yeah, yes.
As far as I know, going to various farmer market things, they're not thrilled with the idea of ending up on the county property for the summer. And the biggest one to keep in mind when you were talking about all-weather terrain, I thought it was very pertinent what they brought up was so many people come to shop, they are not necessarily completely mobile. So if all of a sudden you have the Saturday market on the grass, like you used to do 18 years ago, that didn't allow disabled people to get where they needed to go. So I don't see necessarily the farmers, and I'm just speaking as a person who attended things in shops at the market, I don't think they're thrilled with the idea of summer placage in the county. Winter, I don't know what you're used to.
You know, I just want to say to everyone in the room here, 2 days ago, we didn't know what conversation we were going to have today. So forgive us if we don't come out of the gate totally prepared, because we didn't know what discussion we were planning to have here. So let's not feel that we've lost ground if we don't leave here today with the perfect plan. Okay? Go ahead.
But just a very quick realization that part of the master planning process takes into consideration some of the multiple use that we're talking about. You shouldn't be limiting yourself just to the 25,000 square foot building, but a master plan that would expand over time to include other facilities, other buildings, other improvements that would accommodate the ability to have a place that would attract or house some of the long-term, I don't want to say tenants, but ongoing weekly things like farmers market, as well as accommodate a boat show coming in at the same time. And if you look at most fairgrounds around, they have multiple buildings that will do that in some fashion. Okay. So it just gives more options to, and that's not anything that's going to happen in the first phase, but a second phase, third phase of a master plan would accommodate that.
Crazy thinking aloud, and tell me I'm probably crazy, but could you hypothetically have the farmers market under the covered arena and then have another event going on in the exhibit hall?
Is a covered arena a permeable walking space, or is it dirt?
I think that's all to be defined. If it had walls and a floor that we could put down, absolutely. In Deschutes County, the Hooker Creek facility is a big concrete floor, and they've got a big loader, and they move the horse footing in and out as they need it, and it's a big, beautiful concrete floor that'll accommodate any sort of thing that needs to happen.
Interesting.
So I think you talk about all of those sort of things, but that's obviously nothing that's going to happen today.
Now, you don't or can't forget some of the other things that are going to go hand in glove with this structure, like for instance parking, and some of those support type things, management. Who's going to, we're going to have an on-site manager that's going to do the booking and be responsible for getting the maintenance done and things like that. And speaking of that, once we build it, we got to talk about it. Despite the fact it's going to be a new structure, it's going to require some maintenance. So there's a whole lot of ancillary types of issues to be talked about other than just the structure itself and what the structure is going to look like.
So I have a question of those who favor this outdoor riding arena idea. How can that be multi-purpose? In other words, you know, I've gone into this now for 6 years, and I said, okay, can we come up with a sort of a guideline that says if whatever we plan cannot be used at least 25% of the year, then you shouldn't have it. So that argues for having something that has the ability of being that thing, but also being three other things. And so that's been the hardest thing for me, is how, for those fans of that aspect, how do we satisfy them knowing that what they're using we can use differently tomorrow and next week?
Well, besides equestrian, various motor sports events, whether it be mud bogs or destruction derbies, could it be a concert venue as well?
So
we've used it as that.
Yeah, so those three things are tough to accommodate together. Mud bogs, right. Auto racing and broken auto parts, oil spills,
yeah.
and equestrian use are tough. However, what I would say, though, is I think where people have been successful in having an arena would be if it were covered and had walls. Mm-hmm. And when I think of that, I think of some of these new, and I think Mr. Geltner mentioned this as well, some of these new tent-type durable structures like you see at the Denver Airport.
Yeah.
If that facility were covered in that fashion, had a concrete floor, and we had a loader that could move in and out the horse footing, that it could accommodate a thousand different things. We could put a boat show or a sportsman show or a car show in there. We could do concerts in there, and it would be supplemental to whatever the main exhibit hall, whatever the new multi-purpose building would be as well. So again, I think you build those in phases to make them work.
Stephanie?
And that's exactly what we were looking at many years ago when I talk about the uses I could have a covered structure like that. If you could give me a number of 4,000 people in there, you can do just about any kind of concert, any kind of motorsport event, any kind of rodeo that is a very viable, financially secure situation, because you can't book a concert, obviously, over what you can get at Chinook Winds. I can't bring in an artist if I can't give them 3,000, 4,000 seats. I just can't do it. It's just not economically viable. And you can't do a Oregon Jamboree, and you can't do some of these events here when we have such a weather issue. If you just can cover it, it doesn't have to be heated. It doesn't have to be first class. You bring in your cascade sound, or you bring in, you know, the portable stages. If you have concrete and you have a roof and you can keep the wind off of people, you can put the butts in the seats.
So you can build that a lot.
You can make that happen. It would be great for the second flat, for the second phase facility to be your major issue. Get that exhibit hall built first.
Then
give us a minimum of 100 booths.
Mm-hmm.
And then you build the second structure featuring 4,000 proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
If those can be your goals, the peripheral amenities that you can offer for the community's use the rest of the time, you've got your core. You've got your core.
And I do think Todd makes, or is alluding to something that's real important. At least most all of the what I think are successful facilities that I've seen like this do have essentially a massive concrete slab that everything mm-hmm. sits on, and they put different types of flooring, if you will, on it. It could be dirt for a horse show. It could be a basketball court. It could be a concert thing or whatever it is. And they simply change the surface that's on that mm-hmm. concrete slab to accommodate the event. And I think that's a real key point. And in order to be able to do the types of things we're talking about, I think that's the kind of thing you have to do. You've got to have that slab, and then you've got to have the stuff to go on it for the different events, and you have to have the equipment to put it on and take it off.
Use those drop end posts in your concrete so you can just drop in your portable ends for the different livestock events. It becomes basically a barn when you need it to.
Yeah.
So are we talking about the same multi-purpose facility having this integrated into it, or are we talking about two separate?
It sounds like two separate structures.
I would see it as the multi-use facility being more upscale, and the covered arena area, both of them working in concert, but one being something that you'd use car shows, horses, etc., one being convention center, breakout rooms, cleaner, more...
Exhibit booths.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But still but not really...
Type of drink.
Yeah, but both having that very realistic ability to accommodate a huge variety of events.
Yeah.
You know, we can put a car show in either.
Maybe private parties
so
if we continue to do those.
Pardon?
Can that be bleachered?
Where?
The outdoor.
The outdoor one, you'd have the rolling ones.
Yeah, you'd probably. You'd probably have portable bleachers that would move in on the sides. You'd also be able to set it up with chairs and concert stage for musical events.
Okay. Yeah, see, what we're getting towards is really a two-structure solution.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But what that, and if we do what they're talking about with the outdoor arena, that probably means that we don't have to build nearly as large and complex of a main structure where the exhibit hall is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because 25,000 is not
enough. We're not going to need 25,000 square feet in that structure anymore because we're going to have the covered arena for the large scale events. So maybe our main new structure shrinks and the money that would have made it, say, 25 or 30,000 square feet goes to go and make the outdoor arena usable in the manner that Stephanie and Todd suggested.
I would keep the main exhibit hall the 25,000 square feet because there's a lot of uses you can't use the outdoor arena for, even
or
I think that's the balance.
Or at least build it with an eye to be able to expand in the future if you need to. Maybe that does start at 15,000 feet, but an ability in phase three to turn that into 25,000.
I think you go big or go home on that one.
Yeah,
keep it plain.
I do too.
Keep it plain.
Yeah. But also, if you have the outdoor arena thing available, like you're talking about, we wouldn't necessarily have to probably, even if we keep it at 25,000 square feet, make the same sort of investment in that structure as we would if it was the only structure.
Right.
Right.
Because some of these things are going to happen over in that covered arena, and that this new building doesn't have to accommodate them.
Right.
And so even if we don't shrink it in size, we nonetheless may be able to make it more versatile in other areas and save some money because we have the other structure for the concerts.
Less is more, Jim.
Well, how do we move this forward now? I mean, do we want Emily,
and you too. We'll call you
back up here to what's on the agenda and what I thought this discussion was going to be when I planned to attend this meeting. For process.
Yes, that's what I wanted.
People in this room have every right to celebrate and indulge and have a good time building castles in the air after 6 years of essentially being in neutral. Now you can put in the clutch and start going somewhere. But essentially the last 45 minutes have been self-indulgent, fantasizing and saying what we would like. But process, this fair board, it's not your responsibility and not really even your prerogative to decide what the plan will be. What your responsibility is, I think our responsibility, is coming up with a process by which the public will come up with a master plan.
As far as I was concerned, we're only generating ideas to bring
right.
to the table.
They're
discussion
just throwing
starters.
Out brainstorming and all this, but all this is going to have to be done over again in
yep.
a more public
yep. oh, yeah.
setting.
Right.
I've been involved everywhere I've lived for decades in various public planning processes for public projects, whether it's a recreation center or anything. I mean, you name it. The essential thing is to make everybody feel included.
Right.
But, of course, I mean, we all go into this knowing that even if you had a public meeting every week for 5 years that was publicized in every medium and there were sandwich boards and a sound truck going around saying, everybody come to this meeting, we're 5 years down the road, when the plan comes together and is presented, somebody's going to stand up at the public meeting and say, why wasn't I involved? Why wasn't I consulted? Why wasn't I invited to be part of the
That's
process?
Right. I think Tom talking about specific outreach to like specific
so, yeah.
constituencies like
but you have
sports,
to do it.
Folks.
Right.
Yeah.
You've got to make it a public planning process and get everybody together to brainstorm and put in either or two cents worth while the process is going on. So that, I thought, is what this group was going to do, is say, what's going to be the process for establishing and publicizing meetings and brainstorming and
right.
whiteboard sessions, and you know, how are we going to get to a master plan?
Well, Emily, this is part of the process, so you'll have to bear with us.
I know. You're yes. entitled. Entirely entitled.
This gentleman.
Yeah, my name is Cody Gray. Yeah, I come up with a bunch of little questions like he had there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the Seafood and Wine Fest, and, you know, you hear when anything happens, you hear all these rooms, well, we're going to do a Seafood and Wine Fest there. Is that something you're maybe considering?
That's not going to happen. The Chamber of Commerce Board talked about it off and on for a couple of years. That's why we were originally talking about potentially a 50,000-square-foot exhibit hall. But the Chamber Board of Directors finally decided that no, the site, as far as they're concerned, the overall site, the access, the parking, it's just too much. They said the Seafood and Wine Festival definitely will not happen there. However, they have expressed at least very tentative and formal interest in some kind of a second event. You know, remember back in the 80s, I think for a few years, they tried to do a brew festival in the fall, that maybe developing an event that would be cited on these grounds, but no Seafood Wine.
I chaired that for 2 years, the first 2 years we had a brew fest in October. Yeah.
I think you were ahead of your time. Beer culture hadn't really sprouted the way it has
now.
No,
but again, it's a weather issue because we had done, in October, it's very difficult for that, at least a little more structure than a tent.
Right.
And so that was the big issue.
Yeah.
And those two events, or at least the Seafood and Wine Festival event, is just too big for the fairgrounds, no matter what you do.
Right, yeah, yep. That's what they decided.
But, the right facility, there's a lot of other events that could happen.
But if you can't do that, then you're really not looking at maybe having a major football game or baseball game or basketball game there, so that's out of the question, too. Yeah, like that, me coming kind of new on this, I don't know what you're looking at, you know. So how big are you going to do this? You know, are you looking at you could actually look at doing a two-story building. Look at the building you have right there now. That bottom building made bigger with a cement building, and then going up a floor with a steel building. You know, steel buildings are half the price as anything else you can build. You know, you could have a two-story, you could have a 20-foot lower building and a 40 or 50 foot upper building, and have the same thing for around the same money.
Right. Realistically, though, I think at least one of the things you mentioned, like a basketball tournament, is within the realm of possibility. If we had the covered area, as we're talking about, with a concrete floor and had a basketball court we could set on it, and the fact is, if you watch the NCAA tournament and so forth, a lot of the venues, that's exactly what they do.
Mm-hmm.
That same place is used as a hockey rink, it's used as a basketball court, it's used as a concert facility. When they want to play a game, mm-hmm. they bring a court in and set it on the concrete and put up the stands. The facility we're talking about at the indoor arena, seating, I think 4,000 was mentioned, that would be adequate for a pretty darn good-sized, like high school basketball tournament,
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
That you could
host,
mm-hmm.
As well as concerts and other types of things. So some of those things I think you mentioned, sir, are within the possibility. A football game, probably no. We're not going to be that big. But some of the
other
things.
There's a football
things, yes.
arena right next door, stadium
right.
at the high school.
Okay, you have the National Guard down here. You were talking about this building here being a service building at 2 in case of emergency.
Right.
I think anything like that is a good idea to put in part of that main building that you're going to put in there too, just for emergency people.
And we had some discussion with the National Guard about whether they'd be interested, because they are looking at redeveloping their property about, you know, the joint EOC and National
Not
Guard facility.
Not necessarily the site, but we've had discussions about co-locating some stuff with National
Yeah. So
I mean, they're kind of, you know, I've lived here my whole life. I mean, I had calves at the fair.
Mm-hmm.
I've had chickens and ducks and did different things over the years. I was involved in a trailer giveaway that we did in there for a big party one time. I mean, the fair has a lot of uses, and I see I'm excited you guys got these good ideas. You know, like you said, everybody in the county wants to get the 210 now. I went home with that. They're going to be sick.
Now that they know we've got money and we can actually
And you don't want to waste a lot of time on that either. Right. You need to have, what you were saying, get a basic plan of what you want to do, and then, you know, have people go out and say, well, yeah, okay, we can expand this and do this. She had a really good idea of what she was saying there. Like I said, emergency, never hurts to have places to put people in emergency. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the lights go out, a place with a generator. I mean, you can't beat it. You can turn on the heat, at least they're warm, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, we could have storms and turn off all the lights in the whole county. Where are we going to go? I don't get, I live in Celeste, you know. I'll stack up some wood, man. I ain't kidding you never know. I might be 2 weeks without power. Who knows?
Let me interject this comment. You mentioned the National Guard. We don't necessarily have to co-locate with National Guard, but we could have an intergovernmental agreement with them for sharing of facilities in the event something bad like you're suggesting happened. That would be a really good idea.
And maybe that's a good point to make. Is that
I figured you guys are already doing something like
that. See, now I was going to say, with those that are talking about emergency, we already have in place. That is an integral part of our emergency planning, the existing facility.
We are
already incorporated into it. We have agreements. Same thing with school district facilities. It's, it's already there. So it's going to be part of whatever we do, no matter what we do.
We what we do. We're already doing those things, as Wayne says.
Yeah.
Our problem is we don't have anything to offer yet because we haven't built over there yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, I just want everyone to know that I fully expect that this would be a long meeting because I want it to be drawn out.
Yeah.
I want everyone to get things off their chest because I want to eventually come back to process and Emily's point because I want to be clear from our city county legal counsel, what exactly is the authority that the Fair Board brings to the process of decision making? But did you have some final thoughts?
Yeah, a couple more. You guys are talking about 4,000 people. I've been to a lot of concerts up at Chinook Winds, and I think they run 1,500 to 2,000. I'm not sure.
No, 800.
800
people.
That's
yeah.
it.
Oh, I know. It seems like a lot of people.
It's 800.
I never talked about expanding, but they never have.
Nope, it's 800.
Okay. Well, you know, in that same line, just about everybody here has probably been at a concert there. If they haven't, they've really missed out. But what you run into is you know, if you can put on a concert for and have 4,000 people there, that's where you make money.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. You get the right person, you get the right coordinator, you get them lined up. You want to make money, you could do one every month. I mean, the right people in the right place, coordinate, stuff like that. I mean, that's what the fairgrounds is there. Well, I look at the fairgrounds to be there for me. Mm-hmm. And my kids and my grandkids, you know, they want to grab one of my sheep and make a pet out of it, take it to the fair. Mm-hmm. I'd have them out there in a minute. You know, because I think that's what it's, I mean, that's what the fair is really about, getting together, competition, you know, and you guys heard it 1,000 times, you guys are doing it, you know, I just couldn't even have to say it, but that's what it's about, you know, I mean, the fair, Jesus, go to the fair, I mean, and the idea with the arena, what a great, you know, I can see motorcycles racing around inside there, I mean, like you said, put the right floor, they throw some dirt in there, you have mud bogs or anything, you know, and you can probably leave the seating pretty well up in it most of the time.
You can push back and forth.
Yeah, you know, get
depending on the
like that
sort of layout you want.
Yeah, you squeeze them in and make it twice as big. But you got to have a place for people to watch. But no, you know, I just said, you know, I just have to have by, and this is really exciting to me. I'm glad to see that you guys are on top of this. If I know when the other meetings are, I'll probably try to catch a couple more.
Was that all, Cody? Or
yeah,
I got a question for the chair now.
Yes.
Getting back to Emily's process question, I mean, we're having fun brainstorming. We're getting some really good ideas out there. But, yeah, this is not going to be making the plan today or even the next meeting. So I'm wondering, just a question that occurs to me, are there any architectural firms that maybe have master planning expertise as part of their portfolio?
I'm sure there are, but before we continue discussion about what that cloud way out there is going to look like in 10 or 12 years, I suggest that that's only half of the process.
Yeah, we got to do the short-term stuff.
The other half of the process is how we get to that point, what we do in the interim. Now, based upon, like, the city funding that was talking, that we've been talking about, it doesn't start until, like, 2019.
Right.
It's going to take a while for this new 1% room tax to go into effect and collect some money. It's going to take time to go and develop the master plan and then to have the architect do the actual design and so forth. And we all have a little bit different opinion about exactly when we could have this site ready, if you will, and start doing the things we've all been talking about. My personal guess is it's 2016. I would guess about 2025. It's going to take roughly.
Sure, it's not that long.
I know that. I think we have to plan that way, because at least part of the funding stream doesn't start until 2019, and we still have to start collecting the 1% and get some money together, get the financing together. It's going to take time to do a project like this, and I don't think figuring 8-10 years to get there is unrealistic. And frankly, I'd rather be planning for a little longer time then wind up on the short side.
But on the other hand, Mr. Belmont, I mean, can't we do revenue bonding, borrow against this future funding stream?
Yes, absolutely. You can do that. And there's a couple of financing sources here. When we get into the details of that, we'll talk about that more. But what Mr. Weisman's alluding to, and that's the one component we have to play in here, is that it's significant. And $3 million is nothing to...
That's a significant piece.
It's a significant piece of the funding. It does not become available. You can't borrow against it, initially. So it's going to have to be in place before you can actually take some of the major, at least the exhibit hall pavilion project on, if that's going to be part of your findings.
Yes, question?
Okay, I'm just an audience, but all of a sudden, with Wayne's discussion about the city funding, what was the city funding to be used for? Because that was very unclear as an urban renewal. I sort of went, well, maybe they're going to repair the roads around or do the plumbing, or
there is a component part that says specifically for an exhibition facility at the fairgrounds.
I should be able to see in the city documents, because I went to all of those meetings, and everybody kind of went, well, let's talk about something else. Somewhere in the writing, it says for an exhibit hall. Yes. It doesn't say to create the exhibit hall, like underground water or something.
No, but that's another component that is available, and part of the things we're going to have to look at is the infrastructure out there. Jim alluded to that a little bit. For anything you do out there, there may be additional urban renewal money for that in addition to that part of it.
Okay, so the $3 million is for the exhibit hall, and then you're hoping to get some more from the city.
You know, I want to be real careful with saying it. That being said, they've identified that as a component project for urban renewal. But obviously, as you're discussing, who's involved in the process for looking at the building there, if they're going to put $3 million on the table, they're going to want to be involved in the process of planning out what that facility looks like and where it's going to go.
Yeah, and some of us have heard some city councilors question whether that's really there.
Well, I think their point is, until they actually...
The point is they're not going to write a $3 million check and give it to you tomorrow.
Because they won't have it, because they have to see it for revenue bond.
Correct.
Okay. I mean, if it hadn't been included in the plan, we wouldn't have even the possibility of it happening. Exactly. I think the city councilor, at least some of the members, just wanted to get it on record that there's still additional steps in the process before that $3 million check is written, if it's written.
I know nobody wants to hear me say it's going to take 8-10 years to actually put this in place, but I'm an engineer, and I'm in this scenario of hope for the best, plan for the worst, and work on that basis.
We hear you, Jim.
And so forth. That is just realistic when you do a major project like we're talking about.
I have
I just want to say that I know that, tell me your name.
Ellen. Ellen Bristow.
Ellen. Ellen was a frequent attender.
That's right. Okay, I'm going to be a frequent attender.
Wayne and I both sat on that urban renewal planning group. And it's about as easy to get your fingers around that as this process is.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Well, it's harder.
Okay. So all of it is out there in the ether, Jim's cloud, you know, it's sort of... We know it's out there somewhere, but anyway, you had a question?
No, I can help you. I was a port commissioner for the Port of Toledo for 18 years, but you make it pretty sharp on it. I don't doubt that your port commissioner is too. We got, the time I was in there, maybe 15 grants from grant outfits, and most of it's covered by a grant, I think. They didn't cost it. We only had to pay part of it to do just what you're talking about. They come in. And they can look at what you want to do, they can go with what you want to do, or they can add stuff onto it, and you're looking at a couple of months. I mean, you know, they don't take a whole year to make these decisions. And there's a bunch of people out that are real sharp at doing what you want, and I think Oregon State, or I think they got a group of folks that do it too. I would check with your port.
Well, the only problem is that we have to have a little bit more in hand to know what to tell them we want. And we're not there yet.
Well, no, I know that. But when you're looking for somebody that can come in and look at your stuff, most of these outfits are only like three or four people. You know, they can send somebody down to set up your meetings and go through what you're talking about. And I think part of it, can, like I said, can be funded from someplace else. It's a grant thing.
But I agree with this gentleman.
But it's up to you. You got to do what you want.
I agree with this gentleman. I mean, that's part of my thinking, too. It's not something, however, we're going to do today. We have to, a fair amount of preliminary work to do before we get there. But we are going to get to a point that he's talking about where we know specifically what we want to do. And then we start talking to the grant people that he's talking about.
Well, talk to the poor guy first.
Yeah.
I mean, the poor guy will tell you what to do. I mean, they do it all the time. I mean, what a great... I mean, you guys have the use of all of them folks, too.
Well, you know, during that urban renewal process, the city hired that woman who was so knowledgeable about the urban renewal process. And I guess that's what I meant when I said... You know, what's the compromise between Jim's point of an architect who's going to want to have their fingers in the pie versus our having a person who's more kind of versed in the more general planning of these larger concepts? I mean, LRS has a lot of fairgrounds experience, and presumably fairgrounds that were as multi purpose as ours is. So I'm not sure that we couldn't go back to them again, but they were in team with Eco Northwest.
Right. Because we wanted the economic component.
Yeah, we wanted that component. So, but I still want to go back to the point that Emily raised about decision making.
But before you do that, I want to interject. I talked about an architect. I'm not necessarily talking about the person who's ultimately going to do the actual design of the facility. But the type of person that you're talking about, a master planning expert and so forth, is more than likely found within the confines of an architectural firm, like LRS.
So
that's really what I'm talking about, bringing in, when I say an architect, bringing him in on the ground floor. And it may be an entirely different person who ultimately does the actual design of the structures and so forth.
Right.
But we need help with this process.
So
yes, we can. We can't do
so it. So let's go back to this comment about does this board have the authority to make decisions about the planning process?
No. What you would do is be making recommendations to the Board of Commissioners. Remember that actually LRS was hired by the county, by the Board of Commissioners. And I'll just reflect, just so it's real clear, you know, that look at what we're calling this new facility, the area itself. It's the Lincoln County Commons, home of the county fair.
Right.
So the fair board's function is to make sure that a fair event is occurring, and the board has relied on you to give recommendations on this process, whatever the process is we're going through, very much rely on you. But ultimately, it would be a contract that the county will enter. So, but they're looking for recommendations. So you're taking the first step and saying, what would you recommend?
So, Mr. Chair, if I could ask a question to Mr. Belmont, maybe. Based on our discussion today, Mr. Belmont, do you think you could come up with a draft RFP that would ask for the expertise we're looking for here?
I think I can.
Because, I mean, I could see LRS as potentially fulfilling all of what we're talking about, but there may be other firms out there, and I think...
Well, can I suggest, too, and I think Emily was mentioning it, I've been through so many master planning processes, it makes my eyes sweat.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm involved very deeply. Not only was I involved in Urban Renewal Newport, but I'm on their visioning committee, so mm-hmm. there's an interesting process. They have consultants. Mm-hmm. Some of them are architects, an architectural firm, master planning firms. Some of them are mm-hmm. do more of a public participation process in there. And that visioning process they're undertaking is, you want to talk about the, I do a different with the gym with clouds. I start at the 100,000 foot level and work my way down to, you know, nails, how many nails in here are they galvanized or otherwise in constructing something. And Newport's process now is a 40-year plan. They're actually doing, they're doing a very public process to develop a public plan for what they want Newport, what they're visioning Newport to look like at 40 years. And that's a skill set for their consultants that's different than I think what we're looking for. But it may be more than simply looking at this point for an architect to put the plan together. We're looking for something sort of maybe at the 20,000 foot level, not at the 10 and not at the 100.
Somebody who can take the ideas that have been put out here today, take the ideas that haven't been brought forward yet, but we want to make sure will be brought forward, and coalesce it into something concrete.
Yeah, right. Concrete framework from which to work.
And then for the architectural work to start.
And what's really nice about this, the beauty of where we are, is how we've got so many of the site boards in place.
Yeah,
we know the location of the property. We know the size. We know the limitations as well as the opportunities. Incredibly important is we've got funding.
Yep.
I mean, we're not doing the opposite. We're not kind of doing this dream of what we want, how we're going to do it, and then figuring out how do you pay for it. We can tell the whoever the consultant is here, here's the information we've got for funding. We've got a business plan. We can use the LRS information. We've got these sources of funding to do it. Here's what we can work with here. So it becomes a little more concrete in what you develop here because you've got some of those sideboards, you know, in place right now. And that's it's a great opportunity for the community to move forward.
Okay. Who was recommended?
Stephanie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming when you were talking earlier in other discussions that there would be some sort of a group to consult with the fair board as part of the master plan. And have you identified the scope of that yet?
That was the next idea I wanted to put out there, putting together.
Because that's kind of what I've been hanging around here for.
Yeah.
Also, because I see that several people have mentioned basically the same thing of bringing in a few more people outside of the daily operation of the fairground who have interests, mm-hmm. and how much input will that be in the master plan?
So my two-pronged suggestion is we maybe ask Mr. Belmont to bring back to our next meeting at least a concept of an RFP, mm-hmm. and then also at the next meeting we think about appointing a master plan steering committee to oversee the process, and I think we've got several people in this room who should be a part of it, and we've got to identify some other folks who could be part of that. And
invite others who might be interested.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to get somebody in the equestrian community, whether it's Posse or somebody else, sports. We want to, I think we have to get somebody from the school district at the table, given the proximity to the school facilities.
And the city. Don't forget the city.
And the city, of course. Yes.
And might I suggest someone from the hotel hospitality?
Yes, that's another good one.
Because we talked about that as well.
Batchelor being a county, I'd be making a serious attempt to get officials from other cities and the unincorporated area.
Mm-hmm.
You need some imagination going, and with this just as Newport's little kid.
Yeah, no, we did that with the Blue
it's
Ribbon
me
Committee.
Off and I'm the
I agree totally. But try to keep it concentrated. Maybe look for people who have multiple multiple specialties.
Yeah, they can wear multiple hats. That's a good idea.
So that you could keep it into a manageable crowd?
Yeah, we don't.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have to leave shortly. I have a personal appointment in Corvallis this afternoon that I have to attend. But I want to change the subject for
talking about the near-term stuff
before I have to go.
Okay, yeah.
And basically, I'm telling you, and I told you in a prior report, that the grounds and the buildings and so forth have suffered from years of neglect. And if we're going to maintain or have a usable facility until we can get out there 8 to 10 years, we're going to have to do some real significant work over there. You can envision it like this. With this being time, and this basically being cost, and you have a piece of equipment, a facility, a truck, whatever it is, it starts up here with a certain value, and over time, it deteriorates on a curve that looks something like that. And eventually, it gets down to this particular point where all you got left is the salvage value. Now, at that point, you got two choices. One is to either sell it and buy another, whatever it is, or the other choice is to go and recapitalize it. When we used to recapitalize heavy trucks, for instance, we'd completely rebuild the engine. We'd go through the transmission. We went through the differentials. We put all new tires on it. We put all new brakes on it. We painted it. When you do that, that's no longer maintenance. The accountants tell me, or what they call it, was recapitalization. I think we're at the point now, given what's happened with the vote and the rest of it, that we've got to do a significant recapitalization out there on the fairgrounds. And now I'm not going to talk about just the utilities that I've talked about before, but I think we've probably got some roof work and some other types of things that are going to have to be done. And if you do a recapitalization on it, what you do is you bring the value of it back up to here someplace and start another deterioration curve. This is the recapitalization component, the money that you have to spend to get it up there. That's what we've got to do if we're going to have something out there that can be usable for the next 8 to 10 years and can be ready for the type of facility that we've been talking about this morning.
Okay. You've presented it to us. You also presented it to the Board of Commissioners in December, Mr. Beisman, and I think there's definite buy-in conceptually. The one thing that concerned my colleagues on the Board of Commissioners to some degree, so I think they would need more specifics and at least firmer cost estimates, was the pieces you talked about. I think roof and heating for the exhibit hall, I think they were questioning, since that building is going to go, but you know, whether that's a wise investment. But again, if your timeline is realistic and we're talking about that building standing for another 10 years, you know, and I'll still say I hope it's not that long, but even if it's another 5 years, I personally still think we need to do it. So we go ahead.
The other thing to remember is that this recapitalization costs, when you hit that point out here, the cost to bring it back up to here, this isn't basically a linear function that goes like this. It's an exponential function.
Oh, yeah.
It starts going like this. And just delaying a year or two can drive the cost of the recapitalization up as much as 5 or 10 times
right.
What it would cost you to do it this year.
Like if you have to replace subroof as well as the roof itself.
The classic example is pavement.
Yep.
And I did a lot of pavement in my career. Wait a year or two until it actually gets to a certain stage, and it costs you as much as 10 times to go out there and rebuild that road as it would have cost you 2 years ago to go out and put a simple overlay on it. We're, I think, looking at the same sort of thing with our facility out there. I think it's terribly important for the Board of Commissioners to recognize that time is of the essence here. We don't want to get up here on this curve. We want to stay down here as low as we can. And that means we need to start doing this work now.
Yes. Jim, you don't have to sell me. Can I suggest something kind of circling back from our previous discussions? You indicated there were some things utility-related that really need to happen before this fair to make sure the grounds are definitely functional for this fair. Can we green-light that right now and say...
As far as I know, we've already done that.
That's what I thought. Jack Whaley,
our school guy, is not here this morning, but my understanding from my most recent conversation with him, which is a number of weeks ago, is that, in fact, he's already got part of that in place and is doing the rest of it. But I'm not talking about just what we green-lighted Jack to do. I'm talking about significantly moving into the other major components that we've talked about, like the roof for the exhibit hall and things like that.
Can you bring us something a little more articulated for the Board of Commissioners to consider?
Can I suggest you're also talking about, you're talking about post this
year? Yeah, post, for the post fair.
Not talking about anything else. What are you talking about? Talking about starting doing the work, Wayne. I'm tired of sitting and watching. I'm talking about starting and doing the work we can now. We will integrate it within the events that are already scheduled out there so that we don't, for instance, disrupt the fair or do things like that.
Stephanie showed
but in the open periods between these events, we get out there to work.
Yes.
We're now in the middle of May.
Yes.
We're right at the beginning of our dry season, our opportunity to do a lot of the outdoor work.
Yes.
I don't want
it. Yeah, let's
we don't
that,
start
that
doing
going
something in the next
ways.
3 months. We're going to lose another whole year.
Yep. Let's not.
Let's go now.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I am tired of being stuck in neutral.
Yeah, I think the only issue I hear is whether we have to go back to the commissioners for some part of this.
The commissioners authorized some of it, but not all. Not the entire plan that Jim put out. So there's going to have to be another conversation with the commissioners based on where we are now.
But we have authorization to do something.
Well, we're already doing it.
Well, that's already in motion, the stuff that has to happen.
So what motion would get us to the next stage?
Well, I think
we don't need
a formal motion. Okay. I think what we need to do is that we need to have, because the conversation's already up at the board level, we just need to have it scheduled for the board and see if we can get Jim to come back in to the Board of Commissioners and say, all right, you've authorized this part of the recapitalization plan. Now let's make decisions on the rest.
Okay.
There's one thing I want to add in, please, if we can consider, if you guys will bless it as well. I think perception is important. And even though, you know, somebody looks at the grounds the way they were about 2008 compared to now, it's much cleaner, it's, you know, a lot of things are better. But, you know, this utility work, roofs, those are the things that truly matter in keeping the grounds functional. But unfortunately, the public's not going to see that. And I would really appreciate it if we could make a priority between now and fair, getting most or all of those buildings painted. And I don't know if we would have to use a professional contractor or if we could even do it with work crew. I understand they're booked into June, but if we could get them late June or sometime in July, I think if people walk into the onto the grounds and see the exhibit hall, the 4-H building, the barn with a new coat of paint, I don't think that's that expensive, is it? And that sends a message to people, things are starting to change.
I'm with you. When I talked about the piece of equipment a moment ago, I said one of the things I mentioned was painting it.
Okay.
You have to preserve what the structure, in this case, the structure that it's got. But I'm with you, but with the understanding that we're going to, and I would consider that part of the recapitalization as well.
Okay.
But when we go out there to do it, we're going to do it right. We're going to buy the good paint.
Yeah, the stuff that will last.
As we come to dry rot or rust or whatever
it is,
insofar as possible, we're going to fix it. We're going to do all of it that we can now with the idea that we're going to, at least with respect to everything, I want to paint the exhibit hall, but in particular, I'm talking now about the other buildings. We're going to get a coat of paint on. We're going to get those things fixed so that we, if you will, stop the damage that's occurring as a result of the leaky roofs or the dry rot in the sidewalls and the rust that's occurring. I'm with you 100%, provided we go out there with the idea that we're going to do it right.
All right. Okay. So let's make sure we get everything done before you have to leave. So
With regard to the RFP, do we need a motion?
No. There's okay. consensus for me to come back to you with
all right.
And then when you have a document for us to approve, we'd adopt that by motion.
And so the only thing I want to add to that, and that's Cody's comment, I mean, and also my reference to the lady who conducted the urban renewal process, and that is this grant-seeking part. That would be an important piece in the RFP for me.
Yeah, to identify other resources out there, yeah.
Yeah, the person who we're interested in has some expertise in seeking grants for this kind of a family of projects. Okay, so we're good to go in there. Do we have anything else that we have to render?
Maybe one thing related to that, though. Yeah. Do you guys want to suggest if you're thinking that what you want to do is have a master plan steering committee?
Yes, yes.
Would you guys be thinking about, two things. One is that the process we do to recruit people throughout the community, mm-hmm. and it's it.
Yes.
Number one. Then number two is other specific positions or persons
yes,
that you would like to see on that, and
no,
you so guys make some suggestions.
Let's discuss that next
that,
month.
Come back with that next time. Yeah.
Our next scheduled meeting, June 9th, I'm going to be in Burns that day.
Before we go any further, I would like consensus that we're going to add
that's
Bill's painting suggestion to the recapitalization
component.
Yep,
yep.
That's the three things.
If you just go out and paint a wall or something, that maintenance.
That's right.
If you paint all of the structures and fix the drive lot, the bus, and everything, that's in the recapitalization arena for me. And I'd like consensus that we're going to add that to the other previously suggested work.
So are we going to try and hold your thought? Are we going to try and move the meeting? Is that what you're leading up to?
If that's possible. I don't know what the following Thursday would look like.
June 16th.
Are we okay with the fair, with everything?
June? 16th? Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Oh.
But Amy's got the schedules. Is there anything
else?
I think we're
okay. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. No, it's actually June 16th that I'm in Ontario. June 9th. What is it? I'm in Washington. Jeez. Yeah, I'm gone for 2 weeks in June, which is...
Well, the 9th would probably have been better for me than the...
I don't know. Maybe you'll have to meet without me in June
16th. And I got no problem doing that. I mean, I think... That
well,
really
if possible,
is
maybe we get you on a conference call if we need... Because we're going to have the RFP information, probably.
Yeah. But that can be shipped when email in advance.
And I can look at it.
What about June 2nd?
June 2nd, what's that? I've got...
Is that too soon?
That's too soon. Yeah. Well, what about with the end of June, the last week of June, be too late? That it gives a little more time to pull some of this together, like June 23rd?
I have to tell you, I got big family functions from about June 12th to July 4th. So when I can be here in that time period is vague at best.
All right, we've got to have two of us here.
Yeah.
Right.
And is it all right with you if we go with the 23rd?
Yes, certainly.
Okay.
And maybe you'll make it.
Okay.
All right. Todd, what did you have?
I have a list of things to bring forward that we talked about before several months ago, and we decided to put off until after the vote. Some of these may fall into recapitalization. Some of them are just immediate needs before fair, but there are things that I think we need to act on this meeting if we're going to get them done by fair. And whenever that's appropriate, I
let's do it. We'll
you ready to run through those real quick?
Run through it. Just don't worry.
Paint wash inside, outside of all the buildings, including a refit of the bathrooms, both in the Harney building and the main exhibit hall. Those are going to be usable, at least for the foreseeable future. Making that facility usable, I think, is important. Sanding, cleaning, painting, epoxying the main exhibit hall floors. One of the things that makes that building not serviceable is how difficult it is to keep it clean. If we're going to be there 4 to 10 years, let's get those floors fixed, make them epoxied so that we can keep it clean.
Okay.
We talked about the converting the old workshop into storage space so that we can put all the tables and chairs out of the main exhibit hall into storage to open that up and make it usable. And I think Jack said that is feasible. A go-ahead on that would be appreciated. We need we cycled out a bunch of the dead tables and chairs last year. We need to reinvest in some some more poly tables and some more chairs, probably just ballpark, probably 40 more poly tables, probably 300 chairs or more. If I'm going too fast, Tanya.
No, I have a recorder.
Okay, oh, good. Okay. Outdoor lighting, I think, is underway, although I wanted to be sure that that included the lighting in the outside areas adjacent to the livestock barn and the horse arena. I know we were doing it around the main exhibit hall. I don't know if that got on the plan to be sure that those sort of perimeter lights were there as well.
Actually, when I talked about lighting and the recapitalization, I talked about the entire site, not just it,
right. Okay, so good.
Internal lights.
Yeah, and I just wanted to be sure these were all part of the discussion. I'd like to ask for two new sets of bleachers. We've cycled out a bunch of dead bleachers over the years. We replaced one set. We could use two more sets on the west side. I think that would put us pretty well situated for bleachers in the arena area. And again, depending on or regardless of what we do in the future, those are still structures that we can continue to use. As I was working on the outdoor arena, I noticed that many of those panels that you invested in for Town and Country that are on the perimeter of the riding arena are now getting very rusty. I think, as Mr. Weisman said, it's time now to paint those or lose them. So getting somebody on those, a repaint of those. We replaced last year about a third of the very rusty back pin panels, and I think we need about $5,000 more metal out there to get rid of the rest of the junk that's still there. We got rid of the really bad ones, but we've got more to do there. I think it's time to talk about signage and branding of the Lincoln County Commons in our repaint. Great place to do that would be on the back of the main stage. Wouldn't be expensive. Welcome to the Lincoln County Commons. The south wall of the main exhibit hall, it would be great if we built in some way that we could easily display sponsor banners on that big south wall that's underutilized. I think as part of the painting process, we could incorporate something there that would make it easy to accommodate hanging of those banners. The drainage, the drain rock, on the west side of the main exhibit hall, on the entryway and on the overhead door, and then the water issue on that overhead door. I think we should jump on that. The rock is bad not only for ADA access, but also because it all comes into the main exhibit hall. I know there's drainage issues. Let's address those probably as part of recapitalization. And then the other thing that your roof project brought to mind was that the indoor horse arena, one of the reasons we've had trouble using that is that the roof there is so deteriorated that when it rains hard, we have gushers that come down and create leg-breaking holes for horses. So if we could build in, if we're going to keep that building for the foreseeable future, a new metal roof on that would be beneficial.
Could you do me a favor?
Yep.
Put this in an email, send it to me,
and
whoever else, and let me see what components of what you just talked about
I can recapitalization
and put into the recapitalization project. I don't think all of them would fit.
Yeah.
Certainly some of them, like the roof, would.
Right.
So you'll send me your list. And give me an opportunity, in addition to the paint, painting, you also mentioned painting. I'll pull from that list things to add to what at this point has been called a utility recapitalization. Now I'm just going to call it a site recapitalization.
Right, okay.
And I'll add whatever components
perfect.
I think I can legitimately from your list.
Okay.
For the board.
Yeah.
So can we do, and I think Todd's right, have you finished your list schedule?
That was my list, and again, I'll only point out that things like the bleachers, we probably need to get going on those now.
Exactly.
They're going to be.
Can we do some kind of an omnibus or umbrella motion that says, the things that aren't capitalization, but I guess, tables, bleachers, panels, the movable stuff that just kind of a blanket authorization for as much of that to be taken care of before fair as possible happen.
And I guess my question with the bleachers is, are we talking about 100 seat bleachers, are we talking about 1,000 seat bleachers? There's different sizes, different components. What kind of bleachers?
So I'm suggesting just two more of the same one that we bought 3 years ago.
And those were like what?
$5,000 a piece.
I think they were closer to $3,000 a piece, and then there was some money to set them up. Obviously, we used county money to put them together. And mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that. I'm good by motion or consensus that insofar as it's possible, those types of non-capitalization things be taken care of. By the way, we used to have a set of stands on the entire west side of the Roundup, or the outdoor
yeah,
arena.
They didn't get painted.
And do you know why we lost them? We lost them because myself and at least one other engineer went out there and told them, if you don't give the metal that supports the structure here cleaned up and painted, you're going to lose it.
And they
guess what happened? It didn't happen, and now they're gone.
Yeah.
That's an example of the type of thing I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have cost a whole lot of money to go out there and clean that ironwork and paint it.
Yeah.
It's going to cost a hell of a lot more to go in now, and even at $3,000 a shot and so forth, to put stands up out there.
So
that's just... Yeah.
So, Mr. Belmont, would you suggest an actual motion or just is consensus?
I'm hearing a consensus. Yes,
do as much of this as possible.
Yes or not, yes, that's a consensus.
Yeah.
We'll see what we can do.
All right. Hallelujah.
All right, so...
Michelle had a question.
Michelle?
I just wanted to add, I don't know that it belongs in that, but signage regarding no smoking.
Oh, exactly.
I mentioned it because I don't know if it requires some bigger motion. I would like it to include no vaping. Because we have, currently the signage is we're tobacco-free, therefore no smoking, no tobacco products. I really, really would love to get signage and a whole lot more of it that includes vaping. Vaping now people can vape marijuana and you will not know it. If there's a lot of vaping on our fairgrounds, I can guarantee it if we don't include that.
Do our current county signs, no smoking signs, include vaping?
They do not.
Then we need to update them.
Yeah.
Does our current county code?
Right.
I think but yeah, we got
to
make sure.
So I'd like to get that moving so that by the time fair is here,
we
have
that. Your list is right, Mr. Belma.
And one, the code has to say that.
Side.
And then the signs is just a matter of maintenance.
Right.
It doesn't take much to define it. It's getting the authorization in the code that we got to have first.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Is there anything on this county staff update line that we need to cover now?
Unless Amy's got anything else.
Yeah.
Amy, do you have anything else?
No, we just have Master Gardeners coming up this next weekend, and then in 2 weeks, Jenny Damaris is going to be on the east side of Kearney doing an emergency management.
That'll be interesting to see tents out there.
There'll
be a lot of tents.
Yes, sir. Last thought.
A quick thought.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have a picture of the fairgrounds here with little blocks of what size buildings you're going to have so you can move around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you could build your building over where the arena is right now, and then move the other stuff around, you're talking about having new entrance into the place anyway. You know, if you had blocks and stuff you could move around. Another thing, I think you should have a booth at the fair. So when people are there this year at the fair, you know, have a couple giveaways or something, or give with the radio folks or something, and have people move stuff around on it. Think about what's going on there.
We had an informational display the last couple of years, but it really wasn't very visible or very well placed.
It wasn't staffed. I think that ought to be our goal, is try and staff that informational booth this year.
It would be huge.
So we could talk to people.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes, Emily.
I don't know where this would go, but when you're reaching out to people to tell them about the process, about meetings, specifically make a pitch to reach people who think that the conference plan has nothing to do with them.
Oh, yes.
Especially those people. If you think... Fairgrounds, the Commons, has no part of your life.
Right.
Come to one of these meetings and you might be surprised.
Like the gentleman from Sleds who had the letter to the editor a couple of days ago who had three different plans for the property, all basically said level it.
Yeah.
And don't do anything new.
All right, we're adjourned.